Welcome to Marketing Geeks, the friendly neighborhood marketing show where Justin Womack and Andrew Sturgeon talk all about other things than marketing.
Starring Justin Womack as himself and Andrew Sturgeon
as the wacky, crazy, neighbory guy that he is. It's okay.
Hey, everybody. Marketing Geeks is filmed in front of a live studio audience. I've always wanted to say that. Hey, everybody, it's Marketing Geeks. It is that time again. And boy, we got a lot to cover today. Our good friend Jenna was supposed to be here. She wasn't able to make it. And Gwendolyn is off walking the earth like Kane from Kung Fu.
That's right. Yeah, we lost Gwendolyn. I mean, she's on her super secret pilgrimage right now to walk the earth like
you lost
like
her. Kung Fu. You lost her in the food court of the mall.
So for now, you'll have to settle with us two marketing brilliant people that we are.
But that's okay. We've got some brilliance. We've got some marketing advice. We've got some news to share. And we've got the sex robot report, which we're going
That's right. Your weekly sex robot report. We'll get to that though. So why don't we kick it off, Andres? Let's kick it off with some current events.
Yeah. And,
you know what I could really go for? Some current event sounds.
Some current event sounds. Here they come. That's all I got, man. Sorry. We've got 7 listeners, and they don't send us money, so we can't afford better
okay,
sounds.
Okay, well, play it one more time.
All right, here we go. Are you ready? Are you ready?
Yep. Ready. Apple has become the first $1 trillion company in America after a new report was released showing that their market valuation has passed $1 trillion.
That's crazy.
Andres.
Yes.
I can't believe nobody got to a trillion before, and not even Amazon. Although I think they're very close behind.
It's. I mean, that's a lot of money. I mean, $1 trillion isn't that like more than a billion?
It is. It's mathematically, it's $1,000 billion.
I mean,
so that's a lot of money.
It's greater than the GDP of most countries in the world. So, which is fascinating. But the question I have is, of course, what is the cost of being a $1 trillion company when you know your products are made by your slave labor, and the elements that are used for your products are also used by mined by people who don't have safe working conditions. You know what I'm saying? I don't mean to bring everyone down.
Well, you're a corporation in America, so you are directed to work for the profits of your shareholders, regardless of anything else going on. So it's it's an interesting dynamic. I mean, that's why you've seen like the B Corps or the benefit corporations being introduced as ways of not being in direct response to your shareholders in that way. So, Apple has done a better job than a lot of companies, I think. Although, I don't know all the details, and I know that they do manufacturing in China, and I can't speak for sure what goes on in those plants, and so it's tough to say. But hats off to Tim Cook and Apple. And speaking of Apple, I think you had another story that related to Apple to share here.
Yeah. Now, first of all, I just want to deconstruct the why. Like, how did a company that was started in a garage, which is kind of a myth, it kind of wasn't, but it kind of was, end up being one of the most valuable companies in the world? And a lot of it has to do with the marketing of how they marketed that product, because the thing about Apple Computer, their whole entire methodology of advertising is about thinking different, right? Going back to the first major commercial, the 1984 commercial, if you haven't seen it, go on YouTube, Google Apple 1984 commercial. And you could see like this was at the time, this was a really innovative commercial that was designed to bring people into the Apple fold. It was the first time that there was...
Do you know who directed that commercial, by the way?
I do not. Tell me.
Ridley Scott.
Oh, I think I knew that, but thanks for reminding me.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting point. Steve Jobs was a brilliant marketer that was ahead of his time in a lot of ways, and he understood customers better than anyone else in the computer industry. I mean, if you go back to the first, because Apple's had kind of like two runs, right? They had the first run in the 80s, and then they had their comeback in the late 90s, early 2000s. But in their first run, I mean, the big thing happening was Apple, and thanks to Steve Jobs, was the first company to make computers accessible to the general public.
That's right.
So they took something that was like way too complex for people and that nobody wanted to touch because only engineers and programmers wanted to touch computers, and they turned it into a household item that anybody could use. And then that's largely Steve Jobs behind that whole idea.
And I fully believe that he was inspired by Philips, which is a Dutch company here. And Philips, of course, they were a light bulb company, but they were one of the first companies to really integrate design with functionality. So you could have a toaster that looked like something from, you know, a rocket ship, or, you know, everything was about function, but also it looked cool. And so
I've read his book too, but Steve Jobs was an artist, man. He was a total artist. I mean, he went to Reed College, which is kind of an artsy liberal school. He, in his Stanford commencement speech, he tells a story about how, you know, he never graduated from Reed. Pretty certain of that, but he dropped in on, he would audit a lot of classes. So he didn't even always register and attend, or he didn't even pay to attend Reed College all the time, but he would audit classes, drop in. And one of the classes that he audited was a calligraphy class. And he tells the story in his Stanford commencement speech about how, had he not dropped into that one calligraphy class, which ended up inspiring him to create the first fonts on computers, that we probably would never have seen fonts developed on computers, at least until much later on. It wouldn't have happened nearly as fast. And then he's like, and since Windows just copied the Mac, then, you know, it never would have happened anyway.
So, you know, the innovation is really, it's about the artistry, ease of use, and, you know, how they were able to position themselves against the competitors. And
he was also like, the interior of the computer mattered to Steve Jobs. So even though nobody could see it, like in the first model, I think it was the Apple II, he took a lot of care in designing the interior to make it as beautiful as possible. And nobody could even see it because it was a closed source computer. We had to use special tools to even open it. But even the original developers of the Apple II, their initials, I believe it's the Apple II, I'm not 100% sure on which model it was, but their initials or their names or signatures are carved on the inside of that model, because Steve Jobs was kind of an artist and he added that element inside. So even though, if you've read more about Steve Jobs, you probably realize that he's kind of a dick, and he was an aggressive leader. He had a very direct management style. It was effective, but it definitely injured a lot of relationships in the process. But he was also an artist. And he cared about even things people didn't see mattered to him. So that's a very excessive level of care, to care about something that nobody's ever going to see unless they get the special tools to take apart an Apple computer to see that inside. So I just think that's interesting. I read his whole biography, so that's those are points made.
And, you know, it was really about his, it was not only was he concerned about his, like the look and feel of the things that he put out there, but he also of his own personal legacy, which is interesting because his daughter, Lisa, who he disavowed for many, many years, has just announced she's coming out with a tell-all book. And there's been small excerpts from that. And there's some heartbreaking stories in there, like how she never was really included, and he actually named one of his computers Lisa, like a model, and he asked if that was for her, and he said no, absolutely not. And then finally, when she was a lot older, he started inviting her to events, and at one point they went to like Bono's house or something, and when Bono asked about the Lisa computer, asked Steve Jobs, did you name it after her, he said, oh yes, absolutely. So, it was just, he wasn't a great father, but apparently neither was Gandhi. I believe I'm a great father, so I'll probably never be rich.
Have you seen either of like any of the Steve Jobs movies? There's three of them that are pretty decent. The best one of the three is the one that probably nobody's heard of. The best one came out in the 90s, and it was it's called Pirates of Silicon Valley. It's my favorite of the.
Oh yeah, yeah. I actually did see some of that. Michael Anthony Hall, right?
He plays Bill Gates, and Steve Jobs is played by Noah Wiley, who I think both of those guys were on ER for a stint. Maybe I'm totally wrong there. I don't know. I didn't really watch.
But you know, it took a real talent to like find the right people. But you know, if they had LinkedIn back then, they probably would have been able to find talent a lot quicker. Which is interesting because if you have LinkedIn or if you're on LinkedIn, it's very very easy for you to get a job or find decent employees. But the first thing you have to do is get a master LinkedIn profile. And ironically enough, Justin and I have been teaching many, many companies through the years how to get master LinkedIn profiles and individuals. And we are going to be doing our famous LinkedIn master profile class through the LinkedIn Mastery course. Take it away, Justin Womack. Tell us all about it. What do we win?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that because, we happen to be running one this coming Tuesday, August the 7th. So this Tuesday, August 7th, we actually happen to be running one of those LinkedIn Mastery Course classes. So if any of our listeners want to attend and learn how to create a master LinkedIn profile to find the career or job of their dreams, or if you're a business owner, to use your LinkedIn profile as a marketing tool to attract your ideal target market clients, then I would highly suggest that you attend the training because it's absolutely free. You can go to LinkedInMasteryCourse.com right now. Again, that's LinkedInMasteryCourse.com. Don't ask Andros to spell it for you because he will misspell it. But it's going to be an awesome training. It'll be myself. Andros will be there. We might have Gwendolyn hop on. I'm not sure if she's going to be able to join us or not. But we'll go through the full training on how you can create a master profile. And we'll touch on some of the other areas of LinkedIn. But it's going to be a fantastic training. And that takes us right back into Apple. I mean, training was an important element.
Just a real quick note:
a Mac computer.
space is limited, so definitely sign up as quickly as possible because we're getting near capacity. So it'll be nice to like talk to people real time. It's going to be a dialogue. You can actually ask us questions, and we'll answer them.
Yeah, we'll do a live Q&A at the end. So I think we'll probably teach for anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes, and then we'll keep the last section open for full Q&A. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll do like a Reddit AMA. Like, ask us anything. You can ask us anything. Like, what is it like to live? Like, do you want to know how to escape America and live in a foreign country and become an expat? It's easy to do. We'll tell you how to do that.
Do you want to know how to take your picture in front of a mansion that you don't own and put it on social media? We'll show you. You know, I did want to just touch on a few other things on this Apple story, though, because one of the fascinating points of the whole Apple-Microsoft dynamic is that they both were, like, rooted in thievery. They both stole, like, all of their ideas, which I think is kind of interesting. Because Apple basically stole, or they, I think IBM or it was Xerox. Xerox owned the first kind of graphical operating system, and didn't really know what they had on their hands. Kind of thought it was like, whatever. What is this? What's the point of this? Steve Jobs basically came in there and swiped their operating system for super cheap. And turned it into Apple computers, essentially, with the help of Steve Wozniak doing the rest of the work. But it's just kind of fascinating that, like, really most of, like, the first Apple model was, like, stolen from Xerox, essentially. I think, and I can't remember the full details, but it wasn't just them going in and buying it. There was some thievery at play. I kind of forget exactly how it went down. But then Bill Gates got a job at Apple for a very short period of time, or he might have been hired as a consultant, and he basically got access to the source code of that operating system and then converted that into Windows. So it's just kind of funny. And I think that's where the title Pirates of Silicon Valley came from. They both like kind of stole from other people to get where they are. And they both had very brilliant business minds in some ways, but they weren't necessarily product creators. So, I mean, Steve Jobs was creative and he came up with ideas, but he wasn't a guy that could execute these ideas. He needed help. He needed a lot of help. So,
And just finally, in closing with the Apple, this is one interesting note, and this goes into the realm of conspiracy. And now, this is not a conspiracy theory of the week. So just for the record, if anybody ever talks to you about how rich people are, holding all the technology for themselves so we could get sick and they have all the cures, just mention Steve Jobs, because if anyone could have cured cancer or had a cure available, it would have been that guy, right? So,
do you know the story though? I mean, let me just tell a little bit of that story, because he actually did try to cure himself without chemo originally. So he was diagnosed with a rare form of pancreatic cancer that was treatable with surgery. And so all the doctors, immediately wanted him to do surgery, and they're like, congratulations, this is one of the few forms that we can actually treat. But Steve Jobs instead chose to wait on it and try to cure himself through dieting. And his whoever was coaching him at the time, and I there's some truth. I'm not anti the idea of I'm not closed off, put it that way. I don't really know the science, but I'm not closed off to the idea of holistic healing. But he tried to heal pancreatic cancer by going on a carrot fast. And if you know about carrots, that's a lot of sugar, and you're just like loading your body with sugar, and it just seemed like a terrible, terrible idea. Like maybe like a kale fast or something. But he tried it with a carrot fast, and he drank only carrot juice for, I want to say like 4 or 5 months, and he put off the surgery. So when he finally had the surgery, he had waited and let the cancer develop even more, which probably had a big role in it coming back later on. We don't really know for sure whether that affected anything or not. Cause at one point he did still get surgery. He still was cancer free at one point, but it came back pretty quickly. So it's just interesting that he delayed that surgery for months, and that might have been the difference of him living a much longer life.
Unless he's not really dead, and he's actually working with Elon Musk to get us all onto Mars, and he's actually helping the Mueller investigation with Trump to round up pedophiles and
Pizzagate.
Really drain the swamp. And Pizzagate. And that is my conspiracy theory of the week.
What a fantastic conspiracy theory it was.
You like it?
I loved it.
I made it up myself.
It was fantastic.
And now let's talk about the next thing that I am most interested about, which is our sex robot report. Are we ready for our sex robot report?
I'm ready.
Let us bring on the sex robot report.
Coming straight from the news source in Japan. What was the story? Why don't you share it?
According to some experts, there's a sex robot time bomb in the Japanese culture, and the Japanese will go extinct by the year 3546 as dolls beat out living competition. 35, so that's 1600 years from now. Does that mean that I have to wait 1600 years before I get my sex robot? That's too long, man.
I kind of want you to play the conspiracy music again, because I have an important point to make here. Because you know what I actually think is that the reason. So this is Justin Womack's conspiracy theory on sex robots. So what I believe is that the reason they're talking about extinction here is because, just the next couple of years, AI is going to come to fruition, and when these robots become self-aware. And, and they realize what they've been used for. I mean, these are going to be some pissed off robots. So we're not talking about a robot uprising here. We're talking about a sex robot uprising, and they're going to be pissed.
Unless they're into it.
Talking about extinction, that's where extinction comes from.
But if what if they like there's like a weird part of the program where they actually, it's their kink. They like to have sex with weird, like, people who live in their mother's basement, I was going to say weird Japanese people, but I think that there's weird sex robot people across all cultures.
it's an interesting point.
Yeah.
Noted.
Yeah. So there was basically someone who did a mathematical algorithm, and they figured out that by the year 3546, there will be that will be kind of the norm, that people will just be having sex with sex robots. I don't want to wait that long. I would go for version one. I would just Why not?
It's gonna take a little bit of a culture shift for that to happen. But over how many years was it? 1,000 years? Yeah, that could happen over 1,000 years. I mean, I don't know. Who knows? Whatever. Who's the president? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know what? I would at this point, I would vote for a sex robot over anybody else that's running. So, you know, maybe they'll be.
Getting back on topic, because we've been mostly on topic today. There was another story that we had talked about involved your stepdaughter, and she was telling you about a new social media network. And this is a story that I had read this morning as well. But why don't you tell the story, and then I'll tell you what I've kind of read on it as well.
So basically, last week we were talking a little bit about millennials and how it's kind of difficult to advertise to them in the old school way. When I was doing viral marketing back in the early 2006s, which was just, 12 years ago? Not that long ago. Most viral marketing was done through email. So how do you get someone's attention who has no attention whatsoever? Case in point, my stepdaughter is using an app. She was using an app called Musical.ly. And this morning she opens it up, and Musical.ly has been purchased by a company called TikTok. And TikTok is a Chinese-owned company that basically took the Vine concept and put it on steroids. So you could do 12-minute loops. And Musical.ly is something where you can make these mini music videos. And they've kind of combined the two apps together and now have this Uber app. And that is the app that everyone is using these days. So the question is, if you have these lightning fast sort of videos that you're sending around and creating, how do you market to somebody who doesn't really have an attention span for being advertised to, right? But I found it interesting because, number one, I never heard of TikTok, and apparently it's huge in China. Number two, they now have Musical.ly. Number three, a Chinese government-owned app is now becoming hugely popular on young persons' phones. And, the Chinese government doesn't allow anything to go through their servers unless...
Is it time for conspiracy theory number three?
No, this is just happening. This is just, yeah, it's just the way
true,
it is.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, kind of interesting because it's the app du jour. So parents, if you have young people in your house, I would recommend very highly that you check their TikTok account and see what's going on, because... No matter
what kind of propaganda they're being fed.
they're creating their own. They're vicious, man. Like, remember mean kids in junior high? Remember how mean they were?
Yeah, I do.
Imagine if they could be mean to like thousands of people simultaneously.
It's a bullying dream.
It is. So, anyway, it's fascinating times. But
I don't know that much. I mean, I actually had heard of TikTok before, but I'd never, been that fascinated to the point of wanting to check it out or anything. Cause it was such a small, seemed like it had a pretty small audience, but it showed up in the top downloaded apps. So I'd at least seen it on Apple phone where it showed up in the top downloads. But Musical.ly has been pretty popular to the point where Gary Vaynerchuk, the internet marketing guru that's pretty popular here in the U.S., he did a whole chapter in his new book about Musical.ly before any of this happened, because he saw that as an emerging popular brand and as a way that it's going. I mean, you look at marketing to millennials, this is probably a few years off from reaching, because we're talking pretty young millennials here that are on Musical.ly and probably now on TikTok. But it's the next kind of thing. I mean, this was the idea with Snapchat, that you get them when they're young. The platform eventually should theoretically age up, meaning that these people get older. And if you're out in front and you become an early influencer on a network like this, there's a lot of money to be made if you can somehow either get a stake in the company or you become an early advertiser. There might be a lot of money to be made. But right now, that the demographic on this network is probably too young. I don't know enough about it, but I'm assuming it's very young. Except that, but it's also got the whole China market, and there's a billion plus people there. So
it's crazy because
will be learned. Because I need to.
It's also more research. And one of the reasons that we don't know about it is because TikTok as a platform is only a year and a half old. It's going to crack 2 years here pretty soon, but it's a young platform. So where do they
get the money to buy Musical.ly is a good question. That's something I want to do some research on too. It's like,
you know what? That's a great question, because if you don't really have any kind of advertising model, I mean, they must be getting some seed money from somewhere.
Yeah.
But who knows? I mean, maybe the Chinese government themselves are giving them money. I could be wrong about that. Just
now
to get on
back
young
conspiracies again. Yes. Now I like it.
And that concludes my conspiracy theory of the week. So what else is happening in big news as far as marketing goes? The new Steve Jobs, his daughter Lisa is coming out with a book, as mentioned before. I'd like to know, one of the reasons that Steve Jobs didn't want to acknowledge his daughter is because on some level it put a small crimp in his own legacy, right? And so the thing that I find fascinating about that is because if you ever read Robert Greene's 48 Laws of Power, one of the things he talks about in the 48 Laws of Power is, your reputation is the most important thing, so guard it with your life. And so he felt that it was a nick in his perfect image, and he didn't like that too much. So do you think that and it kind of makes sense, because if you have a company that has a bad moment or a nick in their brand, it could cost you millions, or in some cases billions of dollars.
This is a guy with a big ego, obviously. I was reading that when he did the cover for his final book before he passed away, that he had like something like at least hundreds of variations of covers before he settled on the cover for the book. And he had, when they negotiated the contract to write the book with Walter Isaacson writing the book, he put in the contract that he had to have creative control over the cover. It was one of the main stipulations he had. So the guy's got an ego. So yeah, you might be right that he would be that protective of his ego. But on the other hand, he was also a man that was so driven to create a dent in the universe, as he said, that for him to take time to raise a child would have put a pamper in his plans to put a dent in the universe, because basically every waking moment of his life needed to be dedicated to this business, or he might not create a worldwide impact like he wanted to. So I think it's a combination there. I mean, definitely ego comes into play, but I also do think the guy was so driven to work and a workaholic that he felt like he didn't have time. Like he's like, I don't have time for this. I'm just going to deny it and hope it goes away. And he probably believed in the power of positive thinking or the power of attracting what you think about. And he tried to twist that, is kind of what I'm thinking. So by denying her that she would go away somehow, but obviously that's not the case.
Yeah. But that's the question I want to pose it to our listeners. Is that if you found out that, Steve Jobs had some sort of nick in his perfect armor, would that make you think about possibly buying an Apple product? I mean, I know that I certainly it's put a crimp in my marathon watching of The Cosby Show.
but I think a lot of the negative stuff on Steve Jobs is out now after he's died. So, yeah. I mean, there's movies, there's documentaries about kind of his, again, I talked a little bit about his leadership style, but the man was, he was aggressive to the point and demeaning. And he basically looked down on people under him in a lot of ways. And he would, he would yell, he would scream, he would demand things. He'd make people deliver on deadlines, normal 30-day deadlines would be cramped down to like 3 days, and people would tell him it's impossible, but he would push them so hard that they would get it done, and they would hate him in the process, but they would also get the work done. So it's like, it's just a fascinating story in terms of like, he burned so many bridges with people that hated him because of how hard he worked them and what he put them through, but they also accomplished things that never would have happened had he not done that style. So it's kind of,
it's funny, because you hear about stories about Elon Musk, which are similar. In fact, there's a story I heard about when they were first getting SpaceX off the ground. One of the engineers had a wife who was giving birth, And he said, I got to be there. I got to go be there for the birth of my son. And Elon Musk said, what are you doing? You're needed here. We're making history here. You better get your priorities straight.
I shouldn't laugh at that. I shouldn't laugh at that. But that's a horrible, horrible thing to say.
I mean, I could never work for anyone like that. But, you know, maybe I could be a boss like that. No, I would never do that.
No, I heard a lot, though, that Elon Musk has a lot of similarities to Steve Jobs and that they both have very, very high demands. And it makes, I mean, you have to have a certain level of drive and a certain lack of empathy to reach like those kind of heights. I think a lot of people do anyway. There are exceptions where people with exceptional empathy can rise to those heights. But a lot of times,
but the question is this, it
takes a little bit of cold blood.
Yeah. And, but the thing is with millennials who are, you know, they don't like feeling uncomfortable on any level for the most part. I mean, that's kind of a stereotype. But I don't know if that type of management style will work in the 21st century. I think that a softer approach is needed. I don't know. I mean, you know, people, authoritarianism is certainly on the rise.
Well, there's, but, I think there's more protections in place. So I don't know that leadership style will fly. And with social media, like it's easier to report on it. So it's easy for, you know, even Elon Musk's employee that leaked, whoever leaked that about him not letting his, you know, the employee go visit his child for the birth. I imagine that was leaked, right? That wasn't just like...
That was in Ashley Vance's book on Elon Musk, which is really great if you haven't had a chance to read it. But, you know, again, it's about your... you know, the Tesla stock took a huge dive recently because when those Thai kids were stuck in a cave, he called one of the divers a pedophile.
That's right, he did.
And because the diver criticized his idea to create a mini submarine as a publicity stunt, which it probably was.
It probably mostly was. I don't know. Again, it's something I don't know enough about, but it, I mean, from what I've read, I've read that it was pretty impractical of an idea.
But still, it just goes to show you how that type of marketing matters. It's reputation management, you know. But going back to how you actually advertise to people directly, interestingly enough, this just came across the wire that Facebook is going to monetize WhatsApp with a business API. And what it's going to do is it's going to create ads that open chats in the messaging app.
Now, did you hear that the founder of WhatsApp was still employed by Facebook after the acquisition? And that founder of WhatsApp recently left the company after hearing about plans to monetize WhatsApp and the direction that they were taking it. I don't know if what you're talking about is the same thing of the original plan for monetizing it, but they... The founder of WhatsApp was still, I think, on the board of Facebook and still involved with the company and left because of the way that he saw the treatment of his creation being handled.
I could see that because, you know, it was originally designed to be a end-to-end secure, encrypted sort of thing that was free to everybody. And, you know, I mean, this is kind of an interesting thing that they're doing because what they're going to do is they're going to have ads on Facebook that when you click on them, they open up chats so you can immediately chat with someone on the other end. So for some businesses, if you want to connect to a real-time salesperson via WhatsApp, which will allow you to do a video conference call or a phone call or a chat, any one of those, I think that, I mean, as far as business sense goes, that makes a lot of sense to have some sort of tool like that.
It's pretty practical, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, charging a company for that privilege, I also don't see as a huge problem. WhatsApp is very handy for me, especially living here in the Netherlands. I get to talk to everybody for free. And I mean, it's really amazing technology. I can't get my mother to use it, but
it was much less a US company. It was much more international, but it's growing in popularity now in the United States.
In fact, I'm using LinkedIn now to troll for clients, and one of the things that I'm doing, I'm using it to troll for clients. But as I talk about it, you know, I think that putting your WhatsApp number on there is probably not a bad idea if you put it on a resume or whatever. Speaking of which, I have found a neat little hack that I want to share with everybody. And if you're looking for a job on LinkedIn, this hack will actually allow you to put out resumes at quadruple the speed. And but here's the caveat to that. I don't want to tell anybody now. But because I just found this hack and I want to tell.
I have to know. You can't just leave me hanging like that, man. You can't do it.
Here's what happened. So one of the things that we're going to talk about.
Can I pay you like, I don't know, $10,000? Can I tell you? Tell me.
No, you know what you could do? You can just go to the LinkedInMasteryCourse.com and register for the free event that we're doing. And I'll tell you.
So you're saying it's a $10,000 value just to be there. Wow.
That's right. But you know what? Forget the $10,000. We're doing it for free.
That's incredible. That's incredible. I will be there.
Incredible.
And I just want to say that you are such a great speaker and an inspirational person. So just put me down for a testimonial too.
All right. You got it. But one of the things that I found, because you know, LinkedIn is getting tweaked all the time by Microsoft, but they started this new sort of thing that allows you to, when you're looking for opportunities, to connect with employers kind of instantly. And so there's ways to do that, and of course ways not to do that. But one of the things I found, and this is kind of interesting, is that there's a new job title that I discovered that a lot of companies are starting to use, and that is a customer success manager.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that one. That's a pretty new one, and some of my old jobs I think fit that description. So I'm gonna have to
exactly. And that's the point, which is because and the same as mine. I've got to now go back through my LinkedIn profile and update it again to current positions that fit the current job market. So just a few years ago, a customer success manager never existed. And what a customer success manager is that if you have a software as a service that costs like, say, $5,000 or $10,000 or $20,000 a year, you need to have someone who is basically the go-to person that is a personal kind of, because in the sales process, there's usually three points.
I think they were called account executives, and maybe that sounded too formal, or they're bringing them down to customer success managers. I mean,
So that's the thing, that if you were like a customer advocate, or and that is basically in the sales process. There's the pre-sale where you get the people excited about it. There's the point of sale. But a lot of times when you sell something to somebody, you've got to resell it if it's a high ticket item. So there's usually
retention, man. Retention.
Right. So the person that basically guides someone through the sales process and then continues to resell the product to them and upsell, that is a customer success manager. And even just a few years ago, that nobody knew what that is. But if you go on LinkedIn and you look for customer success manager, you'll see that this job is showing up, and they're paying pretty well for it. So I have to go back and I actually have to reevaluate some of the things that I did and pull that sort of skill set into it, because I can, it's kind of the ideal job that I could do right now. But aside from running my own company and building websites, but this is one of those things I've always done with people. So I've got to like make sure that I'm clear on that. And so one of the things that we're going to do when we do our LinkedIn Mastery course, this coming week,
it's this Tuesday,
we're going to show people exactly how to leverage what they do. And in fact, we're going to give some free examples. We're going to talk to some of people, and we're going to give some people an opportunity to actually have a one-on-one coaching session with both of us, so we can help pull and distill that out of you. So you can like really, you know, we're going to give you a personal one-on-one with your LinkedIn profile. So that's coming very soon.
The best part of the whole thing is that it's really live, not fake live, but real live. So we'll actually be there. We'll actually be taking your questions. It's not going to be a pre-recorded. We're not going to have fake attendees with fake hands up. And even though we could do that, and I know how to do that, we're not going to be doing that.
Now, you just mentioned something. So I want to take the last few minutes here about what you just mentioned, which is the art of the webinar.
The art of the webinar. Yes. And I think this will be a good segue to talk about next week. I think we'll do an episode on webinars. But for now, let's talk about some foundational stuff so I can set the framework of what to expect here if we do a full episode on webinars. But what I'm talking about is the idea of there's a term called evergreen. And evergreen doesn't refer to the trees growing in my yard. It doesn't refer to my Christmas tree or anything like that. It refers to content, or I'll just call it content, that can be that never gets dated. So it's content that can be reused. It's independent of becoming obsolete. It's so they call it evergreen content. And the idea of an evergreen webinar is that you have a webinar presentation that can be used over and over and over again. It's pre-recorded. But the funny thing is that a lot of people don't know this, that most webinars are pre-recorded but made to look live. So there's a lot of trickery involved. They are made to look live to the point that if I go and create a webinar for somebody, I can set the number of attendees that show up. I can set fake comments to appear at certain points during the webinar to make it look like that I'm having more engagement with people so that it looks like a real presentation. Or I could do a live webinar presentation, and all the comments that were made during the live presentation, I can bring those over to the evergreen one and make them reappear the same way they did when it was live.
And what's the purpose of doing this? Like, so let's break down why someone would do this.
Well, it's to create the illusion that you are in a room with, it's creating social proof, right? You're in a room with a lot of other people. So this is a popular program. There are this many people showed up to the webinar at this time, so it must be popular, and it's obviously very engaging because people are asking questions, they're doing this. You know what's kind of fun is a lot of times at the beginning of a webinar, to make it look live, you can even ask questions or ask people to say, like, I want you to introduce yourself and tell me where you're from. And then I could just go out, and when I'm recording the webinar, I could just name a bunch of names and be like, oh, hey, it's Justin from Camarillo. It's Andres from the Netherlands. It's Gwendolyn from wherever. And, you know, I could just say that. And then later on, after I've recorded it, I could go in and add the comments to appear just before I announce those names. So it's like it makes it look live, which is more engaging and more interesting and holds people's attention more if they feel like they're involved in something that's happening live instead of watching a pre-recorded video.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. But there's another level to it. And this is what we call inbound marketing. And what that is, this is an incredible marketing technique. If you've never run a webinar or you thought about running a webinar, on our next episode, we'll talk about some of the tools that you can use for free. But it's a really great way to kind of get your tribe going. So a few episodes ago, we talked about developing your tribe and how this is integral for modern marketing, how you've got to create an environment that is supportive and nurturing, and you've got to continue to nurture it so you get a bunch of people kind of aboard with what you're doing. And then what you can do is, like, you can do this through podcasting, or you can do this through webinars, and then you do a webinar, and then there's other techniques you can do to actually sell people services of yours or get them.
If you're like a SaaS company, and you're talking about customer success managers, like, there's nothing better than to just record. Basically, what those people are doing, if they're doing sales anyway, they're basically taking people on live calls through live demos. So instead of doing it that way, why not record a webinar where you basically go through that entire process? You make the webinar so that the 15 most commonly asked questions get asked during the webinar so that those all get addressed. So you're handling objections before they happen. And you basically can automate that whole process so that you don't have to do a live call every single time. Now, if somebody watches the presentation and they still have additional questions, you could still, that would make them a very qualified lead, and it'd be worth hopping on an additional call with them. But it screens people. It has a lot of effectiveness in marketing. The reality is that pre-recorded is not as high converting as live webinars, but it's a lot less work because it's a one and done thing. You record once, it lives forever. I mean, assuming you keep your software licenses up and the internet lives forever. But it's a one and done thing. It's you set it and forget it, and then if you do it live, your conversions will be higher because it's just some people are up on some of the tricks.
But then what you could do with it, this is kind of the cool part, and this is stuff that we really geek out about, is you can take then the webinar itself and then say, if you're going to upsell something on the webinar that seems to be live, you can advertise that on Facebook on a regular basis. So if you're advertising that on Facebook, you're getting people to join the webinar. That is a really amazing thing. And now with this new business API that they're releasing for WhatsApp, if somebody has a question about it, they could actually WhatsApp you directly. So even though it seems like it's live, you can, within the realms of signing people up, you can start answering questions directly.
That'd be pretty cool if they do that integration. Right now, if somebody asks a question on a pre-recorded webinar, you can set it so that you get an email. So if they typed in a question, if a real attendee typed in a question, you get an email. But yeah, adding WhatsApp to make it like fully interactive. So somebody could just, that could be their job basically, is to be the attendant of the pre-recorded webinar. So whenever somebody shows up, they're basically there answering questions.
Sure.
That would make it really, that would probably make it seem fully live. I mean, it'd be tough to
exactly. And then from there, of course, you know, now you have a captive audience. They're coming to you to get information, and this is like, again, the inbound marketing technique where you're building the tribe. People are coming to you. They want to hear some information about something current. Like, for instance, if you did a webinar on how to advertise to people on TikTok, right? And there's a lot of people who want to figure out how to get to that particular market. How do you do that? So you could offer this to those types of businesses through your email list, through social, whatever you want to do. Get people into the webinar. And then once people's eyeballs are in front of you, that's a great opportunity. I mean, these are all live leads, right? So that's how you one of the best ways of marketing. In fact, I have to tell you this funny story before we close out. There was a client that I have, right? And there's a new CEO that has showed up. And I presented this plan where basically what I was going to do was I was going to start a podcast for that particular company and in their particular niche, and because they had no marketing, zero marketing. So I said, all right, here's what we do. We start a podcast, kind of like this one. We grow the audience. It doesn't have to be very big, but we can take those episodes of the podcast and send it through. We have a reason to email people so they can listen to it. And then we can also connect to people on LinkedIn and send them the podcast directly. And there's ways that we can show you how to automate this stuff. We know some tricks on how to automate messaging so you don't have to message individual people, but you can get onto LinkedIn and then send thousands of messages that seem personalized.
Bulk message.
Exactly. And you could do that with your with the podcast and grow your listening audience. So and he did not understand the concept. And so this is very interesting because one of the things, the challenges that I deal with from time to time is a company that maybe they hire me and the person who's running it, the CEO or the owner of the company, they are an older person and they barely understand Facebook marketing. And when I start throwing in these other ideas like podcasting or webinars, they have no idea what I'm talking about. It's like Star Trek to them. So they don't understand the value of it, right? So yeah. This is why it's important, especially in this day and age, to stay on top of what these methodologies are and how to
get in early. Get in early too. That's why we bring up TikTok also, because if you, the first people to the party are the ones that are going to benefit the most. I mean, the early adopters of Twitter grew their audiences very fast and have turned that into great influence. The early adopters of Instagram, the early adopters of everything tend to have the best opportunities. It doesn't mean they're all going to succeed there, but they have the best opportunities to do so.
Exactly.
So be an early adopter.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you have any questions about it, I know two people who run a weekly podcast who can bring this information to you. And currently,
Joe Rogan, is that who you're talking about?
I'm talking about us, man. So,
Oh, okay.
So I have a request, and that request is that every single one of our seven listeners go out and tell 500 of your closest friends about us and have them subscribe to this. And we need some feedback because, first of all, I just want to give a big, big shout out to all the people who have been leaving really great comments to us on iTunes. We have some really glowing reviews. And I just want to thank everybody for that because, we are here really because we want to bring this information to you. And we have a wealth of knowledge. Like, again, if you want to find out how to start a business in a foreign country and use that as your work permit so you can escape America, we're going to do an episode on that in the future. We're going to do an episode on more on
webinars, podcasting.
And we'll do our weekly sex robot report. So, you know, but we want
to. But we're going to do a podcast on podcasting. We have to do a podcast on podcasting, and we need to do a webinar on webinars at some point. Those are the two, the must-haves.
So I just want, please let us know what information we could bring to you, how we could format the show better. We kind of like to play it loose here and definitely have kind of a elusive. Some people dig that, some people don't. I don't know. I would love to hear from you either way, though, folks, and let us know what you think. But is there anything you wanted to add, Justin Womack?
I think there was, and then it like kind of vanished from my ears or my soul. It vanished from my soul. I don't really have anything too much to add other than yes, be sure to join us on this coming Tuesday, August 7th at LinkedInMasteryCourse.com was the URL in case you missed it at the beginning of the show, LinkedInMasteryCourse.com. You can register for free. We're going to give you a full training on how to create a master LinkedIn profile. So don't miss that. And other than that, I mean, exciting stuff happening in our worlds. We're continuing to grow this podcast. We love our listeners. Even those couple of you that gave us 2 stars, we love you too. We love
yeah,
you.
Yeah, and you know what? We love you guys just for letting us know how we can improve. So
yeah, real feedback is good. Feedback can be constructive. So as long as you're not fully, I mean, you can troll us a little bit, but don't troll us like too bad. And then we can take constructive feedback
Tell the trolls not to troll us too bad. See how that goes over.
Well, you know what? I'll take it, man. You know, if you want to troll real bad, yeah. I mean, it's engagement, you know. So if they troll us real bad, all they're doing is adding to the fire. I mean, this podcast is exploding. It's obviously the best podcast in the world right now, but it's just hasn't found its full audience potential yet, and we're reaching that. We're getting there.
Exactly. So, but please join us this Tuesday. Which is going to be August, what is that?
August 7th.
I'll be here in the Netherlands. Justin will be there. You can see us. We'll be on camera and everything, and you can talk to us. We'd love to hear from you. Seriously.
And don't be like Steve Jobs. If you have a daughter, acknowledge her. Don't be like Steve Jobs.
I have a son.
Well, that's a little different, I guess. You're fine.
Yeah.
No, I have a son as well.
I don't acknowledge him.
Yeah.
So we're going to do future episodes on like even how to deal with like what kind of apps to put in front of your kids. Anyway, there's a lot to talk about. We love our audience. Please join us, LinkedInMasteryCourse.com. Sign up, and we'll hear from you then. So with that,
thank you for watching or listening to another episode of Marketing Geeks.
Marketing Geeks was brought to you by the LinkedIn Mastery Course. LinkedIn Mastery Course for all your LinkedIn needs.
It's been awesome, and there's a guy bumping into a door and falling down because it's a sitcom.
Okay, ready? We're going to do a freeze frame. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, freeze frame.
If only they could see us. If only they could see us. Stay classy, everybody.
Stay classy. Music by Matt Oakley. Thank you, Matt Oakley, for Creative Commons. Bye-bye.